blind at Arjuna. There are many disciple successions. The same truth is being revealed by Buddha Sampradaya, Shri Sampradaya, Kumara Sampradaya. I find that Arjuna was in the Kshatriya line. And through the ages, Vivaswan, Manu, this is another sampradaya in which it was handed down specifically in the line of kings, which Arjuna was meant to receive it in. All the great kings of the world. One time the entire world was run by one king at a time, and these kings were all instructed within this disciple succession. But then Krishna explains that the nature of time in this world is everything becomes corroded by time. It's the nature. So therefore there's a need for the world to come from time to time to revive the original. But at the same time, amongst great saints and sages, it was still perfectly intact. Because at the time of Bhagavad Gita being spoken, Veda Vyas was on the planet. And he was one of the great recipients of this disciplic line, was he not? And also Narada Muni. He visited Dwarka just before this battle. Huh? He also was instigating Kamsa, so he was there. He was Veda Vyasa's guru, Param Guru. So therefore, amongst the sages, the disciplic line was there. But the kings were the ones that would disseminate it to the masses. And amongst the kings, it was lost. So therefore, Krishna was reviving the original teachings. Sanatana Dharma.
There is no record of Arjuna's parampara.
Well, because it's the parampara of Vivaswan, of the kings. That we say four sampradayas because that sampradaya it no longer exists.
So after Arjuna there was no didn't continue.
Parikshit Maharaj. He was also in that line. He also taught according to the same principles. But after Parikshit Maharaj was bitten by the serpent and was cursed by Sringi, we do not find kings who are following these principles and handing down these principles.
Jaimini,
huh? His son, last person, Jaimini. He was also a great saint. But it did not endure much after that amongst the kings. So Krishna is explaining this Vivaswan, this is an actual disciple succession of the Surya dynasty. But it was specifically handed down from king to king, from ruler to ruler. Do you see any kings today that are in this line of discipleship? You see the four lines of disciplic succession that are still present on the earth are not amongst kings. They are amongst ascetics, renunciates, sages. And even they are practically lost from time to time, and then somebody comes to revive them to the people's eyes.
So this parampara does not refer to the parampara of the saints, of the enunciation.
The same teaching, the same identical teaching, but it's a different line. This is a line that was specifically carried on five great kings and dynasties. They were all pure devotees.
What does it mean when it says it appears to be lost? Which means that it is never lost.
It appears means to the general people. It's never lost. Sanatana Dharma is never lost. Essentially, there's no difference in the teachings of the various paramparas, Vaishnava paramparas. It's like at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there were so many Sahajiya Sampradayas amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Of course, Jagannath Das Babaji, Gorkhashoda Das Babaji, they were existing at that time, but they and handfuls of others, they were recipients of the true parampara of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But to the people, it appeared to be lost. Everything was mixed up. All sorts of unscrupulous additions and subtractions had taken place. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur re-established the principles of the parampara by writing Jagannath Das Babaji, Gorkhashoda. They were not writing books. They were just chanting bhajan. But Bhaktivinoda through his books, thus they did not preach that much. But he was vigorously preaching and defeating arguments, and he re-established the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So in that sense, it appeared to be lost, but it was not lost. But just as we see that the Lord either comes himself or sends some divine empowered representatives to revive and create a renaissance within the disciple line, which by time generally deteriorates into different types of mixtures of Mayavad, Sahajiyasam, and all the mental speculation, immorality. Caste consciousness. So, so many of the branches of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they are different Nityananda bumps or Dvaita bumps. Their whole concept now is that you must receive initiation through someone who is born from the seminal line of these great personalities. So these are deviations.
Any difference between a Brahmarshi and a
Rajarshi?
What is the difference between
Brahmarshi
and
a Rajarshi? A Brahma Rishi is a Brahman Rishi, and a Raja Rishi is a king Rishi. Raja Rishi is an actual emperor, a great king, who was a pure devotee of the Lord in disciplic succession. And a Brahma Rishi is like you? Such a word. A Brahman, a sadhu, rishi. The spirit of devotion is the same, but the position is different.
In the Bhagavatam, we find many paramparas. Even among the saints, but they are lost over a period of time. Even among just two, three people. For example, you have Krishna instructing Maitreya to Uddhava, to Vidur. Vidur just instructs Dhritarashtra, nobody else. There is no record. So like this, all the discussions that are there in the Bhagavatam, basically just three, four stages, and then they die out. There are actually many sub-paramparas, but these four paramparas we talk about are only the existing paramparas.
But these four are special, because they're always existing. From the beginning of the creation, throughout the creation, these four remain always, by Krishna's grace. The others are paramparas that he, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, only Krishna personally can begin a parampara. So when he appears in the world, sometimes he instructs and a certain line of teachers preserve the same message. But these particular four Vaishnava Paramparas began all at the beginning of the creation and they last until the end. So they are the standard four. And Kali Yuga, they're the only ones that remain.
Maharaj, when this knowledge was, like Prabhupada explained, that this was deviated, but all these years it was coming through disciplic succession. So who were it like, who deviated this thing, Bhagavad Gita? It was coming from Parampara. People would have accepted Parampara only. Then why this knowledge was interrupted by all these demonic scholars, mundane scholars?
Two things. One is people who are within the Parampara that deviate and manufacture, concoct, speculate, not submissively present like postman the previous message. And two is people who are not in Parampara by their own egoistic ideas they present Bhagavad Gita. These two deviations have always been in existence. Sometimes the demons are predominant and sometimes the devotees are predominant. And in Kali Yuga generally always the demons are predominant. Manushya nam sahasreshu kashchit jati. Hardly one approached the yoga.
And unless you are connected with all these paramparas, it is not possible to understand this truth.
It is impossible to enter into the mystery of this science. You can understand partial realizations of the truth, no doubt. But the essential mystery of who Krishna is, who Narayan is, what is pure bhakti, that must be received through these paramparas. But we find also in the Christian church there was a parampara. In the Islamic tradition, originally there was a parampara. In the Jewish scripture, originally there was a parampara. In all of these great religions of the West also, the Lord appeared and established a particular parampara. But there's so many deviations. The Pope is supposed to be the guru of parampara in the Catholic Church. Right? Catholic Church has a very similar concept of parampara as we do. We must accept through the Pope and his representatives. Jesus said that, he said to Peter, Saint Peter, that you are the rock by which my whole church will stand on. And he was the first acharya in that sense of parampara. In the whole St. Peter's Cathedral, that means that all the popes are receiving the message that Peter received from Jesus. So therefore there's a parampara. But of course, even in the Catholic Church, historically there were popes who became debauchees, a complete deviation, total politicians. But then again, another pope may come up and through his ancient teachings and intuition can actually, the real spirit again can be revived. And therefore it comes closer to the parampara again. But you see, these are all temporary paramparas. These are all time and circumstance paramparas that the Lord creates, which are revealing partial truths of the Absolute. But these four particular paramparas are revealing the full truth of Sanatana Dharma, and they will continue on, and they will always continue on. So to receive that full truth, one must accept.
Now you said that there are two ways people deviate from the parampara. The second way, which like from our own parampara only, when they deviate, it's most dangerous because we think that they are from our parampara only. So that time they deviate, then they misled our parampara people also.
That is why Srila Prabhupada told us not to mix even with other Gaudiya Vaishnavas intimately. offer our respects. But those who are following Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, so they are very truly presenting Parampara. But even then, he said, you can become confused. Because if you are an advanced devotee, you will not become confused. But if you are a neophyte devotee, even they present something so oftentimes in different ways that unless we are Mahatmas or broad-minded, we cannot accommodate. We become a little bewildered. And our faith is disturbed. But as far as those who are outside of Bhakti, we know of Bhakti Siddhanta's line, which includes almost all of these books that everybody's reading. Or we're reading. That is very dangerous. Because although it is Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they accept Narottam, they accept Srinivas, they accept Krishna Das, they accept, but still, most of them are tinged with various aspects of deviation. And even the little deviation, when we hear submissively from, our faith is disturbed. And the direction of our Krishna consciousness is diverted. Some are gross deviations, some are subtle deviations. Gross deviations, some people say that their guru is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, incarnation of Godhead, and they teach high rasas immediately and all these things. Those are gross deviations. So we cannot even recognize what's gross or subtle, so ignorant. And others, sahaja means they may say almost the same thing you say, but the principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, they minimize. They want to cheaply jump to high platform. Or sometimes they have concocted interpretations. Just like, for instance, some of you were saying that Prabodhananda Saraswati was Prakashananda Saraswati. Now, to the true Gaudiya Vaishnavas, that's an offensive statement. Prabodhananda Saraswati was a very, very pure Sri Vaishnav from the very beginning of his life. He, Venkata Bhat, Tirumala Bhat, we were discussing this morning, they were pure devotees of Narayan throughout their life in Sri Ranga. He was Gopal Bhatta Goswami's guru from 7 years old, from early childhood. To say that he was a Mayavadi and he was a blasphemer of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even though Prakasananda was delivered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we never hear of him afterward. Right? He's given very little importance, except the fact that Mahaprabhu defeated him. But Prabodhananda Saraswati is given supreme importance. His literature, his writings, his disciple Gopal Bhatta Goswami, his living in Vrindavan, his meeting with Mahaprabhu, his whole life is given supreme importance. So these types of just concoctions, they bewilder a devotee's true understanding of what is. It may seem like a detail, but actually, that same type of concoction or speculation permeates through the whole philosophy of these people who write these books. Therefore, the devotee just does not give any importance to them, does not give any credibility to them.
When you send the list from Shaman Guru, that we should not read the book of Shanda Sakya. The one book that he explains the story of Prabodhananda Saraswati. We thought that he was like, when we used to bring that book, it explains all different acharyas like story. In that story explains about Prabodhana and Saraswati. And he gives one nice story, means it appears that it's the truth. He says that he explains everything. Prabodhana Saraswati was in the beginning he was Sri Vaishnava, but he went to Varanasi, then he became Mahavadya Sannyasi, then he became Prakashananda Saraswati. And when he heard that his uncle and cousin, means his brother Sannyas, become Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disciple, he gets angry and he writes all nonsense letters to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, writing that you are a Sannyasi, but you are enjoying
all that concoction. None of the real acharyas accept him. It comes from a book called Advaita Prakash, which is not accepted by our line at all. That's the origin of his story. It's not accepted at all, the Advaita Prakash. Yeah. And therefore, unless we have a guru to instruct us, it's all. Therefore, Bhakti Siddhanta, Prabhupada, this whole line, we don't have anything bad to say about this. We just do not give any importance. We cannot read their books. It's a deviation from our disciple succession. Because to read means you're opening your heart and putting faith in them. You're hearing from them with faith. You're listening submissively to what they're saying. So therefore we can respect them from a distance, but we do not submissively hear from such people or such authors. Srila Prabhupada in his books specifically criticizes the class of men that say this. So if he's saying like that, and we open our heart to submissively hear from somebody else, we're minimizing our own guru, Parampara. We may tell wonderful stories and all kinds of lofty philosophy and everything, but we are not concerned. Gaudiya Vaishnavas, our line, Prabodhananda Saraswati was the initiating and Shiksha Guru of Gopal Bhakti Goswami. How can you become a blasphemer of Lord Chaitanya? How can we conceive of such a thing? In Varanasi, he was the first class, most blasphemous person of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? How could anyone who had received his mercy and attained such loving devotion through him attain, have become like that? Huh? Therefore, it's painful to hear these interpretations.
Even Abhiyal Kapoor had said that.
Everybody. Swarnya Prabhupada, Abhiyal Kapoor, was initiated by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But almost immediately after, he just went teaching. He was a professor. And then later on, when he went to Vrindavan, he took shelter of various Babaji's and received instructions from them. And therefore, in the Gaudiya Math of Bhaktisiddhanta, although they respect him as a good Vaishnava, no doubt, they do not respect his writings or his teachings very much. Because most of the information of what he learned from, he only learned a little from Bhaktisiddhanta, then he went off to be a professor. But then when he came to really dedicate his life and went to Vrindavan, he was not mixing with Bhaktisiddhanta's line. He was mixing with other lines. He took a Shiksha Guru in a line that is not recognized or accepted. So therefore, he's a very good person. But by our standards, he's really mixed up philosophically. Prabhupada allowed him to write for Bhaktivedanta, but scrutinizingly made sure that everything was. But then later on, he said no. Not everybody. Nobody in our line has ever said that. Therefore, we do not give any importance to these books. What do you think?
Maharaj, asking about parampara, which Bhagavad-gita knowledge is coming through parampara. What are the other scriptures, 18 Puranas?
To understand any of the Vedas properly, you must hear them from parampara. Just like in our parampara, through our parampara, you can understand all the different Vedic scriptures properly. Srila Prabhupada wanted to translate all the Vedas with the proper conclusion of parampara. Yes, he wanted to do the Vedanta Sutra, he wanted to do Mahabharata, he wanted to do all the 18 Puranas. But he said everything that is needed to be known, he has already given. He said absolutely everything that any disciple needs to know is within my books to come to the highest platform of pure devotional service. Conjugal love of Goloka Vrindavan. Everything he said that is needed to be known is there. There's nothing else. No need to go anywhere else. In fact, he said in the first three volumes of Bhagavatam, everything was there. But then, because Vaishnava, because variegatedness is such a part of Vaishnavism, he went on translating more and more and more and more and more. And then he left to his disciples who were strictly following his principles to complete the body of God. Can understand all Vedas. But in our parampara, certain Vedas are given importance and some certain Vedas are not given much importance. Because of the 18 Puranas, the ones in Tamaguna, the ones for those in Rajaguna are given much less importance. Sometimes they are quoted, but they are not quoted very often. The only Purana that's given tremendous importance in our parampara is the Srimad Bhagavat. In the Ramanuja Sampradaya, the Purana that's given most importance is the Vishnu Purana. Madhva Sampradaya also never commented on Srimad Bhagavat. So the Bhagavatam is considered the only. It's considered the sum and substance, the essence of all Puranas. According to our line, there's no need for any other Purana except Bhagavata. But our acharyas often cite references from Padma Purana, Vishnu Purana, Rama Vaibhata Purana, Avishya Purana, just for the sake of just complementing some extra details for the Bhagavatam. But all, in our parampara, all emphasis is only in the Bhagavatam. You will not find our acharyas so much commentating on anything but the Bhagavatam. And they'll just bring in some information from the other Puranas, just to give more elaboration to the Bhagavatam. But their emphasis is always understanding the Bhagavatam. Because that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's way. For him, the Srimad Bhagavatam is everything. But which books do our acharyas give most importance to? Chaitanya Bhagavat. But most of all, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's history, Chaitanya Charitamrita is given the supreme importance. The Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Brahma Samhita. Basically, the six Goswamis elaborated on these books. And for those who are in a very high state of consciousness, Krishna Karnamrita, that's given tremendous importance in our karma. Six Goswamis also elaborated on that very much. But that's what they like to. Prabhupada says, and that's what is Paramahamsa. I cannot understand such a book. Gita Govinda. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also relished Gita Govinda. But again, Prabhupada says, unless you are Paramahamsa, you cannot understand this book. It's all imagination.
One thing which in doubt used to come to the mind, that Prabhupada always used to say that whatever I'm saying is, I'm not adding anything, whatever my spiritual master said, the same thing I'm saying. Same thing Bhakti Siddhartha also used to say the same thing. Now in the parampara there are so many gurus that have come in between. We don't know, innumerable gurus have come. If any one of the gurus have deviated somewhere or the other, they could be entered into the parampara. So you'll not be able to get the pure nectar.
Therefore, we find in our line the acharyas who were very, very strict. There may have been so many that deviated. But in the line that Bhakti Siddhanta drew out of our parampara, it is those people who the most staunchly stuck to the eternal principles. Krishna consciousness. Baladeva Jagosha, Jagannath Das Babaji. There were others also between, but they're not mentioned so much because they were not very prominent preachers. But the line that we are given are those of the staunchest, purest, most faithful followers.
And in the beginning also there were four paramparas, basic paramparas. So at that time those four basic paramparas were existing or
they're always existing. As I said, when Krishna was speaking Gita, who wrote the Gita? It was Vedavyas. He's the third guru in our parampara, is he not? He was existing then. He was there. Narada Muni was there. He's the second guru of our parampara. They were on the planet with Krishna. So these lines are there. But to the kings, the line was broken. Vibhishwan's line was broken. Is not the Kuru dynasty descending originally from the solar dynasty, from the sun god? Yes?
Moon.
Kuru is of the moon.
Luna. Krishna came in the Luna, Ramachandra.
And the Pandavas?
Luna.
The disciple succession was the same, obviously. So that particular line is broken. The kingly line. Krishna revived.
I just giving, I can't, speaking or just thinking of these so-called freedom fighters who gave their life for the country, which is, as we understand that it is basically extended form of selfishness, extended self, and for that they were ready to give up even their life. For them, that's the highest, because if you consider yourself the body, that is the highest thing that you can do. So determined and so sincere that they are able to give up their body for the service. And how is it that the devotees who understand the supreme goal of life and all that, still they find it so difficult to give up this ungratification?
It's more difficult to give up your sense gratification than to give up your life. That is the conclusion. In every army, in every war, how many armies are in this war? Whenever there's a war, the soldiers who go into the front lines, they know when they're going that they may die. Very likely they will die. They're willing to give up their life to fight for their country. This is something throughout history, all over the world. Because they because of their bodily concept of life, they consider their country to be so worshipable. When he considers the body made out of the three elements to be myself, one who considers the land that we're born in to be worshipable, huh? It's the Eva Gokara. It's the mentality of Kauravas. But they're willing to give their life on this conception. So to give up your life is not such a difficult thing. But to give up your sense gratification is a very difficult thing. To give up this conception is very difficult. So you see how people can become so courageous and so fearless on the basis of an illusion, a misconception. Huh? How much a devotee should be fearless in his conviction of reality. Huh? They're willing to give their life for a mistake, an illusion. The Lord is willing to give his life for the truth. Even Hiranyakashipu soldiers, after Hiranyakashipu was killed, they all attacked Nrsimhadev. like moths flying into a fire. Obviously they knew they were going to be killed. Hiranyakashipu was so much more powerful than them. But they still, they were just so much attached. They just were willing to die for their cause. Huh? This is a material conception of life. So the material conception of life is such a strong bondage of illusion that people are willing to die for that illusion. And for a devotee, it's such a sorrowful waste. People risking and giving their lives for a lie, for an illusion, a misconception. That's the power of Maya. This means that there are fires in the neighborhood. Samsara-dhava-nala-lita-loka. This material world is like a blazing fire. getting some hint of that here in Bombay. Any other questions?
You are saying so much about this fanaticism. Why even big with gurus involved in all this?
In what?
In this Ayodhya issue.
You cannot judge them. What is their reasons? There is no doubt that there is fanaticism and there is a lot of politics. But also there is certain persons who have definite, genuine spiritual concerns, protection, Sanatana Dharma. No doubt. But it's so mixed up. There's great Vaishnavas, there's other types of Brahmavad sadhus, there's politicians, they're all mixed up. They all have their, what they want to achieve through this. Even though they're all on the same side, they all have different ideas of what they want to achieve. Huh? So therefore, we don't criticize. We can criticize fanaticism, but if someone's not in that category, even if they're involved, simply keep our distance. We don't want to be involved in it. We are more concerned with it. Our business is simply to teach people how to clean up the temple that's already in their heart. Huh? The temple in their heart has already been raised by material energy. We want them to rebuild that temple. Huh? Let the Muslims rebuild the mosque that's been raised in their hearts for all their violent misconceptions. Learn how to make their heart a holy place where God is being loved and served. It's disturbed in so many ways. The Hindus, the temple of Ram in their hearts has been demolished by the Babri of Maya, right? And Maya's built a whole other structure in its place. So we want to tear down that structure, the structure of the bodily concept of life. We want to raise that from our heart. And then we want to rebuild the temple of Ram. Bhakti, devotion. That is our preaching. That is our contribution to all this. Others, let them do what they have to do. It's all meant to be. We are not involved. We cannot get involved in this. Because it's not based on pure devotional service. And karma kanda, most all of it, right? We only want to be aligned with pure devotional service. Huh? To us, Ayodhya is right here. And Janma Bhumi is right here in this temple. Huh? Out.
Said that some people deviate from their that means all original is Krishna consciousness, all original parampara. So is it that Maya's attack that they deviate from? Like some people become mix up with other parampara, that they misinterpret. Is it Maya's attack that, or that is Krishna's mercy that for some time they are going in.
It is Maya. But why they're falling into Maya? That depends on the individual circumstance. Maybe Krishna's mercy that he's allowing that person to go into Maya for some time, just for some special purification. Ultimately, everything is Krishna's mercy, even Maya. Everything is the mercy of God. But certain types of mercy he wants us to accept. And certain types of mercy, it's like when a father punishes a child, that's also his mercy. But the father does not want to he feels pain to have to punish him because of his misbehavior. But still, it's his mercy. So when we misuse our independence and deviate, it pains Krishna. In his mercy, he has to punish us by casting us into the Maya energy. But everything is Krishna's mercy. Nothing exists outside of Krishna's mercy. Krishna's mercy is perfect and complete. For Krishna, there is only from Krishna there is only mercy. But according to our perspective, it appears as either material energy or spiritual energy. But it is all simply Krishna's divine love.
Today in the morning we were discussing, I and Tatwani, all of them were discussing about Prabhupada's Malki Devi Mataji, she was Mata. So she was very much connected with Prabhupada, very intimate disciple of Prabhupada. Now going so much intimate with Prabhupada, giving so much services to Prabhupada, and so much intimate with Prabhupada, and simply she fell down.
But now, she still had her independence. She misused it. But because she was so dear to Prabhupada, Krishna put her in a situation where she'd be purified and come back better than ever and complete her Krishna consciousness in this life. That's Krishna's mercy. She misused her independence, but then Krishna put her in a situation where she would just be running back. If she didn't receive such blessings from Prabhupada, God knows where she would be now. Someone who receives such blessings, even if they deviate, ultimately Krishna just makes all arrangements. It wasn't just the physical proximity of his blessings, but she was actually a very sincere and humble devotee. It's not a matter of just physical proximity. She was actually a genuine and humble devotee, and she was really trying. But then after Prabhupada left the planet, she was a Mataji, her husband left her. She became bewildered. And in that bewildered state, she was engrossed utterly in Maya's energy. She obviously was not a pure devotee. She was a sincere devotee. Even sincere devotees are sometimes diverted by Maya. But because they were sincere, Krishna says in Gita, and eventually, because they are righteous, I bring them back. I make them righteous again.
What lessons should we learn from that, that that should not happen to us? Because if we fall down, then we don't know that's what
like the razor's edge, you have to understand it. You have to be very careful every moment. Maya tempts us. You have to really take shelter of the Vaishnavas when those temptations come. Otherwise, she can drag us away. is always tempting us. We always have a free will to run to the feet of the Vaishnavas and take shelter, or to say, oh, let me see what this is. Okay, she just once you give yourself to her, she steals away your intelligence. And then you become so infatuated and so attached that if Krishna is really merciful, he just smashes you so hard that you see the light and you come running back. She was in critical condition on her deathbed for several months before she came back. And when she came back, she really came back. And she got her health back and everything. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that blessed is that devotee who never leaves his Lord, and blessed is that Lord who, even if his devotee does leave him, he drags him back by the hair. Prabhupada is that Lord who dragged Hayagriva back by the hair, dragged Malati Swami back by the hair, because they were so dear to him. By their own Krishna consciousness, they were too weak to resist Maya, to their previous conditionings. But by Prabhupada's Kripa, they're like Kripa cities. They just have some terrible deathly disease and an enormous amount of pain. They were just dragged back to the feet of God. Anything less than that would not have been sufficient.
They were fortunate that they were dragged back in this world itself, but if you go off and if you are not being dragged back in this world, you have to come once again in this material world, once again in this world.
So two things. One is you should get a lot of blessings now while you can, and two is you should, in case it does happen, and two is you have to be very, very, very careful. You're always the humble servant in the association of Vaishnavas. Maya can never drag you very far. She's always dragging you a little, but she can never drag you very far. But if you give up that shelter, which they have done, they gave up that shelter to a large extent. And they were overwhelmed by the previous conditionings they had. But ultimately it was all to teach them a certain lesson. And they learned. Pretty nicely they learned. I am becoming very late. But today no one could go anywhere, right? Not so bad.
That's from yesterday. Shyamananda Prabhu is taking over.
He is the Rajarishi. He has been coronated. For 2 weeks, right? Yeah. 2 week term. Good, you have to take all the responsibilities. Every devotee should understand what it means to be responsible like this. Regularly. That's very good. I have not heard of a temple that has ever done this, but I think it's a wonderful time. Huh? Rotating president. That way everybody gets to experience what the president goes through, so you're more sympathetic toward the president, whoever it may be. too, is everybody really gets an overall feeling of responsibility for the entire ashram. And three, nobody thinks I am president. And this way is very good. Rotating president. Somebody asks who the president is, you have to say, what date is it? You know, the Devamrita Prabhu has done such a wonderful job as president. And he's gained so much responsibility, insight. And he's doing everything really wonderfully. And he's remained humble throughout it all. So we should all of you should have a chance of sharing that benediction that he received. Huh? Prabhupada said the more responsibility you take, the more you become advanced in Krishna consciousness. The more responsibility you accept on behalf of your guru, the more you advance. We should never think I am president. We should always think I am servant. Huh? President is a responsibility of having more service to more devotees, not the responsibility of being in charge. Huh? We have more obligations to the Vaishnavas. And then the next time is Radha Gopinath. You will become the Raja Rishi. Then you will become Brahma Rishi again. And then, who's after Radha Gopinath? Sanat Kumar also should do
it.
Kardama Muni also. Can you imagine? This will be a wonderful one. It's very good. You must really go all out, put everything into it. Just like the Udupi Math. You know, they have their Pariyaya Swamis, where they rotate every 2 years. Right? Huh?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Yes, 2 weeks. But they rotate every two years, and they take charge of the whole temple. Everybody else is just out. They take charge of the whole temple. Everybody helps. All the acharyas, everybody helps, but they take charge of the whole temple. They have the full responsibility. And their idea is, in this 2 years, we have to just improve the temple, improve the worship, improve the spirit, improve everything as much as possible as a service to all the others for when they come after me. Huh? But we should have that same consciousness. That during our 2 week term we should just try to really improve everything so much. Just like, for instance, in the temple, it's not very clean now. The walls are all dirty and all the wooden asanas are all dirty and things are all torn up. We should get everyone to wash everything now. Let's make it nice. During the next person in turn will step into a nice. Everyone should be trying to make everything as nice as they can. The spirit, the devotion, everything. Of course, we have to do everything direction. That should be us. Just to take advantage of the responsibility and make the ashram so nice during this 2 weeks. Huh? What is your idea, Devamrita?